Oh, I mean, I loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so gritty and kind of like dirty and icky, and no one's really a good guy, and I kind of love that.
Yeah, yeah. Things are complicated.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, as soon as I kind of started getting into it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so fun.
Have you ever wondered how somebody becomes a professional writer? Well, I had a chance to sit down with Mari Takuda and go over with her career, how she ended up becoming a professional writer, how she ended up writing for Weird Games. If you're into Malifaux lore, she has written some of my favorite stories that have been published in that universe. We talk about her process, how she approaches the work, how she goes from an idea to fleshing it out and then potentially getting it published within a universe that is not of her creation. We finish out by talking about the realities of being a freelance artist, what's great about it, and what are some of the challenges. She was a great guest, so sit back and enjoy my time with Mari.
Playing a tabletop strategy game allows you to unplug and test your skills against friends. Every week, Third Floor Wars delivers useful strategies, discussions, battle reports, and reviews to tabletop games like Malifaux. If you want to get better at the games you already play, or discover the games other people are playing, you are in the right place. Craig and Ray welcome you to the Third Floor and the Tabletop Talk Broadcast.
Craig here on the Third Floor. Today we're talking to Mari Takuda, a freelance writer and designer. Now, those listeners who play Malifaux likely already know her work. She has done several different stories writing for Weird Games. In fact, if you picked up either the recent Guild or Resurrectionist Faction books, that contains several of her stories. Now, she's worked on comic books, she's worked on tabletop RPGs, and several different digital games. So, Mari, welcome to the Third Floor.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So, Mari, traditionally, you're actually the first writer that I've had on the show, which I got to be honest with you, I'm kind of excited about because I get to talk about different things. A lot of times for these insider insights, I have game designers and people that work in the industry and stuff like this. And you work in the industry, but kind of from a different angle. And typically what I ask my guests is, you know, how did you find tabletop gaming? How did you get into gaming? But really, my first question to you is, I know that you participate in making games and you write for games, but do you actually play games?
I do play games. Well, it depends. I'm more of a casual gamer. But yeah, I play games like video games, tabletop games. Sure.
Gotcha. And is that something that you did before you started working in the industry, or is that
definitely a
result? Oh, yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So it drew you into it a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, not to date myself too much, but like I started playing tabletop games with AD&D.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah.
So, you know, back when dinosaurs roamed the earth and AD&D was a thing.
The listener, that's a running joke on my show is how old I am. I guarantee I'm older than you. So you might be red box. I'm like blue box. That's how old I am. So that dates us.
Yeah, really. Like, oh, I remember, you know, calculating THACO.
That's funny. THACO. I haven't thought about THACO in a long time.
I know, right?
What I guess that's a good question then is what got you to sit down and play your first role-playing game? What got you to play Redbox?
Well, I had friends who played and they got me into it and I've kind of been playing ever since.
So do you still participate in RPGs?
Yes. Yes.
Now, and this is going to seem like an obvious question for the listeners, but what draws you into it? So what do you enjoy about playing RPGs? Now, you know, I ask other people that and they're like, well, I like creating stories. I like, you know, building characters, but for crying out loud, that's what you do for a living. So I'd be very curious, you know, what you enjoy about the role-playing experience.
I love having a character and just getting to figure out what this character is going to do. And, currently, I'm playing a bard at the moment
okay.
who has a very low wisdom score.
Okay.
Wisdom was a little bit of the dump stat here. And this character makes some very unwise decisions and it's very fun. It gets the whole party into a lot of trouble.
So there's always one character in the party that does that, right? That is the one that always seems to say the wrong thing and just kind of ups the stakes as everybody's going.
Yeah.
It sounds
yeah.
like you are. Now, the group you're playing with now, how long have you guys played together?
Oh, years and years.
No kidding.
A couple of the guys that I play with, well, one I'm married to, and and we've been playing together forever. Ever. Mm-hmm. Like they are some of the people who got me into role playing in the first place.
No kidding. No
yeah.
kidding.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your husband then. Now, did he draw you into gaming? You drew him into gaming? You were gamers that met and fell in love, or how did that happen?
Well, we were both video gamers.
Okay.
And that's sort of, and huge nerds. And I mean, we met when we were kids, essentially.
Oh, wow.
And we've been friends ever since. And then we fell in love and got married.
Well, isn't that a cool story?
Yeah. So we've been friends and we've known each other since we were 12.
No kidding. That is a neat mm-hmm. story. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. my podcast is not devoted to falling in love with your childhood sweetheart. So we're going to talk about you as a writer. So what we're going to do, guys, is my Insider Insight series allows me to talk to developers, designers, artists, writers, and industry insiders about their creative process and how they approach their work. Now, specifically with Mari, I want to get an idea, you know, where she gets her inspirations from, how she does her research to prepare for her writings, and more importantly, how does she create compelling stories, both for the page and for games? So when we take a break, the first thing I want to find out when we get back is how did she become what she is now? So we'll be right back. Howdy friends, Greg here. Nothing makes Malifaux easier than having the right tools. Here at the Third Floor, we love all the licensed Malifaux goodies from Custom Meeple. Not only are they helping support this podcast, they sell custom-made weird licensed tokens and terrain. They sell it all. Crew boxes, terrain, markers, tokens, and even a 3x3 full Malifaux board. Custom Meeple sells a complete M3E token set covering every marker and token you need to play. Custom Meeple are the source for the official accessories for Malifaux. Everything is designed by hand and authorized by Weird Games. Check them out at CustomMeeple.com, that's with one M, or follow the link in the show notes. Up your Malifaux game and be sure to tell them Craig from the Third Floor sent you. If you use the promo code Third Floor Friend, all one word, THIRDFLOORFRIEND, you'll get a 5% discount and help support the podcast. It's valid on everything except retail products and playmats. So I already tipped my hat in the first segment about how excited I was to have Mari on the show. And, you know, Mari, a lot of times when I have guests for these Insider Insights, we've got listeners that are like, that person has the best job in the world, right? They're doing what I do as a hobby, but they're doing it as a living. And, you know, you're again, a very unique guest for us. So I want you to take us back. So what is... when did you start writing? So when did you maybe start to realize, you know, I might be good at this?
Well, I've always really liked telling stories and writing stories ever since I was a kid. I mean, there are just notebooks and files and that my parents had that I just wrote stories.
Yeah.
And I ended up going to college and getting a degree in creative writing.
Okay.
I also ended up going to college for zoology.
And we know you're not a zookeeper, so I guess the writing stuck, right?
I have actually been a zookeeper.
Have you really? Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, clearly an obvious marriage of the two symbiotic degrees there. So, yeah. And so I've always loved writing, fiction in particular. And when I got out of college, I really wanted to get into the game industry.
Okay.
And so I started applying everywhere. Unfortunately, I was already in the Seattle area and we have a really big game industry here.
Yeah.
And I was incredibly, incredibly lucky and managed to land a job as a production assistant at Her Interactive on the Nancy Drew Adventure Games. And
Very
so that
nice.
Was my first job out of college.
No kidding. And yeah. So entry level that you get hired to work on the Nancy Drew games, what does that look like? So what did you do in your first 6 months at the company?
Mostly, I guess, level design, I think it would be kind of considered. It was like scripting what happens in the game.
And
integrating the art, integrating sound, sort of making the design happen.
So in that situation, Mari, are you sitting with developers and saying, here's my ideas, here's kind of what my thoughts are, and then they're implementing it? Or is that the lines blurred on that and you're participating in that process as well?
Well, it was more that it was designed and I was implementing it. So I received the art, I received the design, and I put it together.
Gotcha.
But and I was not a developer in any way. I was not doing programming. I was scripting.
Got it. Okay. And did you, how long in that process, or maybe it never happened, but where did your creativity come in at that point, right? So if I were to go back and look at those Nancy Drew games, where can I find you?
Let's see. On the first Nancy Drew game I worked on, I think I designed a puzzle for it. It was, I think, one of the statue puzzles at the very end of Curse of Blackmoor Manor. And then pretty early on, the scriptwriter for the series tapped me and asked me to start writing little one-off lines as needed. And so I did that and then sort of transferred or transitioned into design.
Very cool. So, I mean, I understand what the word design means, but what does that mean inside of that world? So when you say you transitioned into design, what did you start doing different?
I started handling the logic for the games. So
interesting.
This happens. This is dependent on this, as far as the story goes and the progression that the player makes. And I designed the puzzles and worked on characters and that sort of thing.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. So when you look back at your time doing that, what do you think are skills or things that you've carried with you? So what do you think that you picked up there that has been a part of your life since professionally? Anything?
Oh yeah. a lot, actually. The Nancy Drew Adventure games were very intense logically, as far as this has to happen before this or right. that, and to make it kind of smooth and feel seamless to the player, but make it work on the back end. And so having that understanding and that background has really helped me work in games where right. things do not always follow a linear path.
So it's interesting to me that it sounds like it helped you kind of structure things and kind of structure the logic. And what's funny is, and I don't know how long ago this was, but you know, games have changed a lot. They're not as linear as they used to be. So I'd be curious to know, have you seen that change as you've stayed in the industry where things may have been a little bit more linear in the Nancy Drew games, but they're not so much now?
Well, the Nancy Drew games were in some ways linear, but they were also pretty complicated logic-wise.
Okay.
I haven't worked on, I've been out of the digital game industry for a while now, for a few years. So as far as that goes.
Well, so here's another way to think of it then, is you as a video game player, mm-hmm. is it little, do you sometimes find yourself using that part of your brain when you're playing and going, oh, I can see, you know, how the designer did this, or I can see what they were doing there. Does the insider part of you impact you? Is it when you're playing games at all?
Sometimes, yeah. Although I try to like really get into it.
Good for you.
But yeah, sometimes I'm like, oh, I bet I know what happened there. Or like, oh, someone had to cut a corner there. I've been there.
Oh, that's funny. So now you finish up your time working on the Nancy Drew. Now, did you do other things with that company or did you move on from there?
I worked on the Nancy Drew Dossier series.
Okay, and what were those?
I helped launch that. That was their more casual game series. And so that was a lot of fun. It was a little bit different.
And I guess the other question is did you enjoy Nancy Drew before this, or was this really your first time delving into that world?
I did read a lot of the original Nancy Drew books when I was really little.
Yeah.
And so it was like, oh yeah, Nancy Drew. And so I kind of went back to that, and it was fun to immerse myself in that world. But that's not always the case. And oftentimes it's not, as far as the licenses I've worked on.
Oh, sure. I bet. I've got a 6-year-old daughter, and she is a budding reader, which makes me, a very happy and proud father. Uh-huh. And I read Nancy Drew as a kid. I loved those Nancy Drew books. And so I've got them set aside. She's not quite there yet. But they were good books.
I really enjoyed them.
Yeah. And there was a ton of them too. So, mm-hmm. when I was at that, I'm trying to think of how old, I don't even know how old I would have been, but it was voracious. Like I just couldn't get enough of them. And, I was very lucky to be fueled by that. So it sounds like you not only left working on Nancy Drew, but it sounds like you moved on to a different, like career wise, you made some changes. So what was next?
So after that, well, I did end up, working on Casual Games after that.
Okay.
Unfortunately, they had to cancel the Nancy Drew dossier line, and that team, we went on to found our own company and made a couple of games. And then I ended up getting into game marketing.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, when you were with the company and you're making your own casual games, was that using an IP, or were those original games?
It was using an IP, and it was... we were working with Marjorie M. Liu, and right now she's sort of known for the comic book, which is excellent, called Monstrous.
I think I've heard of it. Yeah, I'm not familiar with it.
Oh, the art is just stunning, and it's great. But she had a paranormal romance series known as the Dark and Steel series, and we figured that the casual game demographics and the romance novel demographics had a good overlap.
Nice.
And so, yeah. And so we founded a company, Passion Fruit Games. And the whole goal was to create games based on romance novels. And so that's what we did. We based two games on her first book, Tiger Eye.
Very cool. Very cool. So did you approach her and say, hey, we like your stuff and we want to make games off of it? Or how did that marriage happen?
Our producer knew her.
Oh.
And so our producer took care of all of that.
That was the magic.
Yes. Producers are magic.
That's
so
funny.
Let's put it that way.
So now we migrate into marketing games. So what does that look like? Like what is that transition like?
I was a marketing copywriter. So copy for games.
A marketing copywriter. And for those that don't know exactly what that is.
Marketing copywriter. The intent is to write copy that will entice people to download or play or get a game.
Okay. Go ahead. So my wife is from the advertising industry, and it's a very unique industry, and it's a very specific type of writing. Mm-hmm. Was that your first time doing any of that type of writing?
Yes.
And what was that learning curve like?
It was really interesting because it's very, very different.
Yeah.
And I did end up doing other marketing work, and this company was a distribution company. And so we worked with other licenses and marketed their games on the distribution platform. So I did get to work with some different licenses that way a little bit.
Right.
And that was always interesting because different IPs have different requirements, and some are more stringent than others. And yeah.
And so now during all of this, are you doing any traditional writing up to this point, even if it's not for money, right? Something that you would do on your own, or because that's where we're headed, right? But up to this point, is that something you hadn't flexed yet, or something that you're doing on the side, or?
Oh, always. I'm always writing something.
Gotcha.
I've always got stuff going on. Actually, while I was there, I ended up talking with a company called Zoozle, and they do interactive fiction. Middle grade, young adult, that sort of age range, maybe even elementary school. And they do interactive fiction based on historical events.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so I ended up contracting with them and wrote a book for them that is hopefully coming out soonish. In the future sometime.
Okay. I looked at your resume on your website, and scroll. I mean, you've made a lot of things. I would be interested, like, someone meets you at a cocktail party and they say, well, what do you do? What do you tell them?
I usually just tell people I'm a freelance writer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I write words for money. We'll write words for food.
yeah. Now, currently you're completely freelance, right?
Yes.
What is that life like? So for somebody that has, dreamt of being a freelance writer or doing freelance, being a freelance artist, I'd be very interested what it's like to be a rogue samurai.
Well, I think a lot of people have a much more romantic idea of what a freelance writer does than what we actually do. So there's sort of this thought that, the end product is also the first draft, which is absolutely not the case. Right. But mostly what I do is run a business. I'm wrangling contracts and invoices and trying to market myself and hunting down new clients and opportunities and editing and rewriting. And so that's what I do.
Right.
And then, but I do get to do this wonderful job of writing. I mean, it's really enjoyable. It's something super fun. Love it.
Well, I'm glad you like what you do. That's a good thing.
Yeah,
that's a good
yeah.
thing. And obviously, I mean, we could do a series of podcasts on this question. So by no means do I want to get in depth on it, but I'd be curious, like, how do you find new work? Is that just, you know, somebody, do they find you? Is it a combination of all of those things?
Yes.
What's the wrangling look like?
Usually I'm the one going out there and searching for new clients. So I found several people they have an open call for writers on their website. And so I'll contact them or, wherever. Occasionally people will come to me, but usually it's me reaching out to other people.
Got it. Well, that's great. So guys, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. When we get back from this break, we're going to talk to her specifically about the things that she's done with Weird Games, because I know a lot of you listeners are Malifaux players. It's where you'll be most familiar with Mari's work. So we're going to kind of talk about that. We'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Noah Suderman, and my dad is a Patreon supporter of Third Floor Wars. I listen to Tabletop Talk because of the hard work and effort that Craig Shipman puts into every podcast so that his viewers can become better Malifaux players.
What is it worth to you to get this podcast on a weekly basis? Is it worth $1 a month? $5 a month? $20 a month? If you'd like to help support the work that we're doing here on Third Floor Wars, please go by our Patreon. We're at patreon.com/thirdfloorwars. There you can pledge at any level, any dollar amount. Whatever you give us will help us put out quality content on a regular basis and hopefully make tabletop gaming a little bit better for you every week. Time for a special shout out to our newest patrons. I want to thank Eloy, Robo Rotten, Jacob Suderman, Joshua Hatch, Donald Kroger, John Fox, David Gadea, Anthony Nguyen, and Alexander Moritzen. Because of you and the 100 other plus patrons, I'm able to put out quality content on a regular basis. I appreciate your support. So listeners have heard me talk several times about how much I enjoy the fluff of Malifaux, how much I love not only the game itself and playing the game, but how much I really enjoy the stories that are written. And I've had a chance to meet and talk to a couple writers that have written for Weird. This is the first time I've had one on the show. So the first question for you, Mari, is how did you find Weird, and how did Weird find you?
I found Weird. They had an open call for writers, and so I submitted my I submitted my resume, and I think I also submitted a writing sample, and I crossed my fingers is basically what happened.
And before that open call, had you ever heard of them or knew anything about them?
I didn't know a whole lot about them. My husband did, because he's more into the miniatures and tabletop world than I am. But so he had heard of them. He said, oh, they sound like a good company. So fortunately, I'm incredibly lucky and so grateful that they got back to me.
That's cool.
They've been wonderful to work with.
So now you send in your writing samples, they come back and they say, you don't suck, we'd like you to write for us. What's kind of next? Do they present to you and say, you know, we need stories about this, or, you know, we're looking for, I literally have no idea how this happens. So what's that process look like?
So I've worked very closely with Kyle Rowan, who I believe has been a guest on Tabletop Talk.
He has.
And he's the one who commissions stories from me. And he always has a specific character or characters that the story will be about. And he often has specific plot points or beats that he wants me to hit within the story.
Right.
And then I'll create an outline, and we'll go back and forth a few times to iron out any issues. And then I'll write a first draft, which is never, ever final draft. And then he'll request edits or rewrites. And basically, Kyle is just an excellent editor. He's a wonderful storyteller, and he has a really solid, fantastic vision of where he wants the lore of Malifaux to go. And so his feedback is always, always really good, and always, always makes the story better.
That's valuable.
Yeah. I mean, he is just a dream editor to work for.
So, that's great.
Yeah, I love working with him. And honestly, if there's anything you like about any of the stories I've written for Malifaux, there's a good chance that what you like was Kyle's idea.
you just filled in the gaps between what we like. Is that what you're saying? That's funny.
Basically.
So you go into this, though, Mari, not really knowing a whole lot about the world. And, you know, granted, Kyle's providing you, you know, this is the character. Here's the main beats, the main points we want to get, you know, beginning, middle, end, and things like that. What's next for you to get into that world and get into that headspace where you can actually, you know, create stories in this world?
Well, Kyle provided me a lot of backstory for any characters that I'm going to be writing and things like that. And so I can kind of get into it that way and get into the world and really immerse myself that way. And so, yeah.
And what were some of your initial takeaways having first delved into this crazy thing called Malifaux? And I mean, it's a wacky place. As a creative person, what was your impressions of it? Were there things that you found novel? Were there things that were like, ugh?
Oh, I mean, I loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so gritty and kind of like dirty and icky, and no one's really a good guy, and I kind of love that.
Yeah. Things are complicated.
Yeah. So, yeah. As soon as I kind of started getting into it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so fun.
So for a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of people that write and they don't, they're not given the structure that you were given, right? So granted, you're obviously given a ton of freedom as a writer in that scenario, but still, you know, having having those main plot points to work around, is that hard to do? Is that restrictive or does that free you up and allow you to kind of flex and know the beats you're supposed to hit?
It's actually really helpful because as a freelance writer working on licensed products, there are clients and stakeholders and people who are in charge of those properties. And yep. So it's not mine. And so I have to make sure that I'm working within their vision. So having more information is really helpful for me.
Sure.
And then having sort of an outline and a framework gives me a lot of room to play within that.
Right, right. Now, do you, I would imagine though, that your experience working with IPs leading up to this obviously had to be extremely helpful. So you're used to having that structure around you?
Yeah. Just because with Nancy Drew, fortunately her interactive had a lot of control over the Nancy Drew IP, even though they didn't own it.
Right.
So they had a lot of influence there. But then, you know, at other places, it is working on IP. It is, you know, someone else's sandbox, essentially, mm-hmm. that you're playing in. So, yeah.
So I'd like to
have that experience.
I bet. So I'd like to dive into one of the stories, and I'm going to let you decide which one. So when you look back at the stories you wrote in Malifaux, is there one that really sticks out for you?
Oh, my favorite is The Parade.
Okay. So talk to me about The Parade. What was the, for those that have not read it, let's talk about we won't spoil anything, obviously, but, you know, who's it about and what did you find great about it?
The Parade is about Molly Squidpidge, and she is just such a fun character. Her and Archie, and they're just very quirky and off the wall, and I really got to play with it a lot. And they did want humor in there, which
yep.
is difficult to write, but so much fun.
Yeah.
So I really had a lot of fun writing that story.
So funny story, I had read that story and then found you. And then it was like, I need to go back and find out what she wrote. And she's like, oh, she wrote that? Because that's one of my favorites, which really got me excited. And part of it is because I play Molly on the tabletop.
Oh, her model is great.
Oh, it's fantastic. But it was really inspiring and neat to see how you fleshed out that relationship between Molly and Archie. And I really enjoyed that. So I don't know if that was a beat that Kyle gave you or something that you discovered, but it really is an excellent part of the story. So well done on that.
Thank you. Yeah. Kyle and I make a really good team, I feel.
That's good. Now, do you, I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. Have you, or do you ever want to write a novel? So, you know, for Weird, you've written short stories, you've done, you know, writing bits here and there. But you know, whenever anybody hears, you know, writer, the first thing you think of is the novel. Is that something that you've done or something you've aspired to do?
Oh, I would love to do that. I'm currently working on a manuscript at the moment that I'm hoping to be able to hopefully put out there and maybe get an agent. Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm kind of putting the finishing touches on it at the moment before I start to query, and I've got my fingers crossed. Like, I mean, it's not easy, but I would love to do that.
Yeah. So talking about that industry, so I had Dennis Detwiller on from the guy who is one of the creators of the Delta Green RPG.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that ended up coming up in our conversation when he was on was the industry and the publishing industry and how the publishing industry works. And he was very apocalyptic doom and gloom about the kind of the current model of, you know, how that industry works. And he made a very compelling argument that it's a dinosaur that already died and nobody realizes yet. I'd be curious to know, for you, do you feel like, you know, kind of that old model of, you know, you get an agent, you find a publisher, you get an advance, you put that entire kind of structure. Do you see that as something that's not going to go away? Or do you agree with Dennis in saying, you know, that's kind of the past and it's going to be different going forward?
Well, I know that there are people who are very, very successful doing self-publishing. And it is a lot of work.
Yeah, I bet.
I mean, they are doing the editing. They are doing the cover design. They are doing the marketing. And they are, I mean, it is, they are doing everything. And so I want to go into that industry, if I can, partnering with an agent who knows the business side of things and who understands that.
So you can just write.
Yeah. I don't want to do cover design.
I don't blame you.
I mean, that's a whole like other, profession and
sure
specialty that, yeah, that is not where my niche is.
So last thing before we take a break, if given the opportunity, it sounds like you would enjoy writing in the world of Malifaux again.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I would jump on that.
All right, good. One of the things that I have been clamoring for is I want Malifaux novels. I love the stories. I want a Malifaux novel. So I am going to talk to Kyle and it'll mean nothing, but you get on him too. Let's get weird to finally put out some novels.
Oh my gosh, that would be so much fun.
I think it's such a rich world. You see Games Workshop does and how successful they are with the novels. And boy, I don't know. I'd love to see it, but I know there's a reason it hasn't happened yet, but I'd love to see it, especially with talented writers like you. So guys, you're welcome. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back from this break, I want to get some advice from Mari. So for those of you listening that would like to break into what Mari is doing or what she has done, let's find out from her things that were successful for her, things that she did that thinks that has allowed her to make a living at this, and maybe some pitfalls that she can help us avoid. We'll be right back. Howdy friends, Craig here. You deserve a new playmat. Here on the third floor, we use Mats by Mars. They are scratch resistant, waterproof, wet erase marker compatible, almost free of glare, and lighter than neoprene. Mats by Mars gives you over 40 designs to choose from. You pick a mat, pick a design, and then you pick an overlay, like one for Marvel Crisis Protocol, Star Wars Legion, or even Malifaux 3rd Edition. Those overlays will really speed up your deployment and make the placement of objective markers so easy. Use our promotion code in the show notes to get a 10% discount on your first order. In the notes of your order, you can even request the third floor logo on your mat for free. That makes the best mat in the business even a little better. So get some new mats, save yourself some money, and help support the show. Go to matsbymars.com. All the details are in the show notes, including the discount code. So like I mentioned in a previous segment, Mari, when a lot of people listen to these insider insights, they get it in their head that this is the greatest thing in the world. They're not really working. You know, they just goof off all day and just get to play around in the gaming industry and, in the creative industry. But I've got enough people that are friends of mine to know that that's just not the case. but before we get into the reality of it, let's talk about how to get into it. So let's say a young guy or gal comes up to you and says, I love to write, I love to create, and I want to do what you do. What are some things that you might say to them? What are some things that you could say, here's some things that you need to do?
I think that the most important thing is to work on one's craft. So whether it's art or writing or game design, never stop trying to improve. And also be willing to learn from criticism.
That's got to be hard.
It's so valuable, though.
Yeah.
When given in good faith, criticism and critiques can really elevate your work to a whole nother level. So, yeah, just learn to accept it.
Now, I'd imagine, though, getting feedback and critiques from somebody like Kyle, who, you know, has an understanding of what you're doing and things like that is one thing. Do you ever expose yourself to Joe Blow Basement on the internet and the critiques that happen online? Have you been a victim of that yet?
I haven't been a victim. I've been very, very fortunate. So you asked me if I was, if I worked on a novel or if I was interested in writing a novel. And I kind of mentioned that I have one in the works that I'm working on. And I did get beta readers from the internet, and they were fantastic.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's going to make the end product so much better.
So I'd be curious then, in that process, when you look back at the feedback, can you think of insights that your beta readers had that maybe blew your mind a little bit and made you look at what you had written differently?
They had questions, a lot of questions about the world. So I thought that in the world building, I'd been a little more robust, but apparently not robust enough. So apparently they weren't in my head with me.
Sure, sure.
So having that outside perspective is super helpful.
So when they're talking about the world and have questions about the world, were they asking you questions that you had already answered, but apparently had not clearly articulated in the work? Or were they asking you questions you were like, oh, geez, I hadn't thought about that yet?
Oh, both.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, totally. I was like, oh, that's a really good question. I don't know. What do you think?
So now I guess I'm going to tie it back to what we started with is how much does you as a role player come into this process now? Because, I mean, you're going into fantasy worlds, you're doing your own world building. I mean, do you find your skills you've picked up as a role player influencing the work you do now?
Oh, I'm sure. Because I would always write backgrounds for my characters and things like that. And sort of getting into the mind of a character and understanding their motivation and things like that is always helpful for whatever I'm working on, whether it's my own stuff or someone else's IP or
right.
anything like that. And I do actually also work on RPGs as well. And so,
you know what? I knew that. That's right. And so I guess that's my next question then is how different is that writing for an RPG as opposed to writing just, you know, fiction stories?
It's very, very different. It's so fun though. But I tend to do more of the lore and campaign side of things as
very
opposed
cool.
to the mechanics side of things.
Right.
And so, you know, creating like story hooks and kernels and NPCs and describing the world and things like that. It's very much sort of the setup that I would do for my own work.
Yep.
But in someone else's world.
in that game world. Now, are you only a player of RPGs or do you actually run games? Do you ever GM?
I have GM'd a couple of times, but I'm mostly a player.
That's cool. Now you talk about, you know, you're not involved in the mechanics, but on some of the RPG work that you've done, does mechanics ever play a role? So for example, when you're creating the lore and you're creating the hooks and the stories for that, do you have to look to the mechanics and be aware of them? Or can you just kind of do your own thing and let the mechanics do their thing?
Oh, I mean, when you're creating an NPC or something like that, you have to know how the mechanics work or
right.
Understand like how the stats work or, you know, things like that. So definitely knowing the mechanics is helpful.
Got it. So now let's talk about, we're going to get back on the advice train here and let's talk about pitfalls. So what are some mistakes you've seen other freelance artists make, or maybe even mistakes that you have made that are potential cautionary tales for some of the listeners?
Ooh. Never, ever do a project without a contract.
Oh, God, I can imagine.
That is, yeah, always get a contract.
Yeah. Now, what, I mean, is that you, when you contract with somebody, is, are you at a point where you feel comfortable enough to read the contract and know it's a good contract and sign or not sign or give feedback on it? Or do you have counsel that helps you with that?
I will generally look at it and then I will have my husband, who was a game producer and looked at tons of contracts, look at it as well to make sure that there isn't something, because legalese is a totally different style of writing and it sometimes doesn't feel like English.
Sure.
And so it's definitely not my forte. But yeah, so definitely look through it. I even have a sort of template contract of my own for freelance writing in case someone doesn't have a contract.
Sure.
Because you never know.
Has there, can you think of a situation where there was something that was in a proposed contract that was a deal breaker for you that prevented you either from coupling with that company, or was there something that you saw and you said, yeah, that's not going to work, and maybe they changed it?
Yes, there was one that was a long, long time ago when I was working in comics. Well, I wasn't working in comics. I had an online comic and a small distributor decided that they wanted to distribute it. And we ended up having to go back and forth on the contract a number of times because it was not a super robust contract, I think. And okay. So there were a lot of areas where, oh, well, this isn't covered. What happens if X, Y, or Z happens?
So when you were kind of negotiating with that company as far as distributing your online comic, where was the stickiness? Was the stickiness around, you know, protections or contingencies? Were you trying to protect your work? Or I'm curious to know, what was it that made you push back?
Oh, I don't remember exactly what it was. This was a long, long time ago.
Okay. Well, so another way to phrase the question then is when you're looking over a contract, what are things that you need to make sure are there? What are protections or clauses or items that you want to make sure are covered in a contract?
Generally, I will make sure that there's a deadline and a discrete payment scheme that says how I'm going to be paid, and also a limit to the number of edits that are going to be required, because sometimes it can be, you know, oh, we want this change. And so that's sort of what I look for.
Gotcha. I can imagine that could go, if you did not outline that could be completely out of control and you would never get done with it because they would just keep having more and more feedback. That makes a ton of sense. Mm-hmm. So the last thing I want to talk with you about, Mari, is reality versus the mirage. So I've joked about how, you know, people, you know, have one concept of what you do versus what you really do. What do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions about being a freelance artist?
Some of the biggest misconceptions. Well, there's a lot of stuff that's not so sexy, right?
Okay.
Like, do you need a business license for your location? Mm. How do local and federal taxes work for freelancers in your area, kind of a thing? So like in the US, if you're a freelancer, you have to pay quarterly taxes and things like that. So just being aware of that is really, really helpful, especially before you start.
Right.
And, you know, like we said, being aware of contracts and having them never do a project without a contract.
Sounds like you have made that mistake. Is that the case?
I haven't, but I have heard a lot of horror stories.
Yeah.
I've been very, very lucky. Or I may have done some work without a contract, like once or twice, but it has worked out okay for me.
Right.
You haven't been burned yet. Because I'm so lucky.
Right. So it sounds like too, or I would imagine, I'm not going to assume this, but I would imagine, because I've seen this with other freelance artists, not necessarily freelance writers, where you end up kind of creating your own like shared experience community where you rely on each other. So there's, and I'd be curious to know, is that true for you? Like, do you have other freelance writers that are friends and maybe not friends that you've ever met before, but, you know, just a greater community that, you can commiserate with? That understand what you do?
A little bit. I'm pretty isolated myself, but the folks who work on RPGs together, a lot of times there will be, you know, chat channels or Discord channels or things like that, and we can talk to each other and get that sort of, oh yeah, the camaraderie and
right. Yeah. Right. All right. So the biggest thing that sucks about what you do.
Ooh. So in the US at least, health insurance.
Oh, I bet.
Very often difficult or very, very, very expensive to come by.
Yeah.
So I've noticed that a lot of the modern comic book writers and artists are Canadian. And
interesting.
I think there's a reason for that.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It boils down to health insurance.
Yeah. It things, and you know, somebody who works for a company, it's something that I just take for granted. That's got to be a little bit stressful to have to deal with, and that gets into the not fun stuff, right? The business side of things and having to deal with all of that. Mm-hmm. All right, so last big question.
Uh-huh.
If you could pick one dream IP to write for, what would it be?
So I've been asked this before, and I don't know. Because here's the thing. I've worked on a couple of IPs that I didn't know anything about before going into it, but it ended up being really, really fun to work on.
Sure.
So, for example, like I said, the Dirk and Steele romance novels.
Yep.
I had never really gotten into the romance novel world or that community. And it is such a warm, welcoming community. And they are such cool people. And I mean, it was such a neat world, and it was just a ton of fun to work on. And
oh,
so
that's cool.
That was, you know, I didn't know that going in. And so I don't want to say yes, this one thing, because I don't know if something completely unexpected is going to actually end up being my dream IP.
Sure. Well, so how about this then? Is there what's the best way to put this? Is there a genre or elements of a world that would make you just go, you know what, I don't really want to write this. This is, you know, what you've got is fine, and that's great. That's your world, and you love it. But I don't think I want to write here at all. Is there things that you would just go, no, I'm good?
I think it would probably come down to the IP controller, ultimately.
Okay.
Because some IPs are very, very strictly controlled, and it's. I mean, it makes sense because there's a lot of money tied up in it.
Sure.
And it can be really, really challenging to work with those IPs. Yep. And so I think that's sort of the IP holder, I guess, is sort of the determining factor on like how much fun something can be to work on.
So you don't see yourself being limited at all by genre or anything? You'd be willing to jump in anywhere?
Yeah, I think so.
That's cool.
I mean, yeah, I don't know what it's so much fun to play in someone else's sandbox.
I bet. That's cool. That's very, very neat. Well, Mari, I appreciate you coming on. Obviously, I would assume you have some plugs. So if people want to get more of you, where should they go?
Well, more of me, if this wasn't enough. You're not overwhelmed by the Mariness, then you can find me at maritokuda.com. That's MARITOKUDA.com. I'm also on Twitter at maritokuda. And I also have a podcast. So if you want to hear me talk about blah, 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 it's Yellow Ranger Fan Club. And we talk about being female and Asian and dorky. sort of Asian history and like Asian American history and sort of the things you don't learn about in school.
Very, very cool. I'll have links to all of those in the show notes. And Mari, at some point, I'm going to try to talk you into coming back and talking with us again.
Oh, absolutely. I would love to. This has been a ton of fun.
I'm glad. And for those of you that stuck around to the end, thanks for listening. Take care. There are so many online retailers. It can be hard to find one that is trustworthy, has great prices, along with some reliable customer service. On the third floor, we love ordering our gaming goodies from Gadzooks Gaming. Their selection of terrain, miniatures, dice, custom decor, and conversion bits are curated for gamers by gamers. you'll find they have what you need and what you didn't know you needed to take your gaming fun to the next level. If you mention Third Floor Wars in the cart notes of your order, you'll also get a free gift. And you'll help support the podcast. Check out GadzooksGaming.com and mention Third Floor Wars on checkout to get that free gift. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch so you don't miss the avalanche of content we create. Links are in the show notes. Be sure to check out our shop on thirdfloorwars.com for the latest in gaming apparel and gear. There you'll also find the latest information for the U.S. Faux Tour. Find out where you rank in your conference or even in the entire United States. Get those models built, painted, and ready so we can see you at the next U.S. Faux Tour Masters event. Please take a moment to write a review of this pod on your favorite platform. Rating and reviewing helps us find more listeners almost as cool as you are. Be sure to share this feed with all of your friends who love tabletop gaming. Thanks for listening. Howdy folks, Craig here. Now if you love gadgets as much as we do, you're going to love the new Third Floor Wars gadget bundle from Schooner Labs. Branded with the logo of your favorite podcast, it comes with two measuring multi-tools, a compass stepper for those tight and important movements, along with a compact dashboard to track your turn, strat, and scheme scoring, along with your soul stones and pass tokens. It is the perfect bundle for anyone who plays Malifaux or just wants to look cool while doing it. The link is in the show notes. Check them out and help support your favorite gaming podcast. All right. Let me think how I want to start this. Well, first, before I start this, is there anything that you want to dive into?
Not in particular. Although Okay. You did have some questions on the call sheet about being a freelance artist, and, like what sucks and what's good, and
what people
not expect.
Let's do that here then. That makes sense here. Perfect. Okay. So here's a perfect example of a call sheet getting completely blown up. because we've kind of touched on a lot of this stuff organically, which makes me really, really happy. So I'm not like the sum of your work segment. I'm going to dump that because we kind of talked about that a little bit. We'll talk about weird and kind of that process. And I'll probably get a little bit detailed into it because, again, that's probably what most of the audience is going to connect with.
Sure.
And then we'll see what happens from there.
Okay.
All right. Start writing. So when did you maybe start to realize, you know, I might be good at this?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. We've got a little bit of thunder going on. So
you're in Seattle. That happens.
It's really uncommon, actually. Okay. I just didn't want that to. Okay. So can you repeat the question, please?
Sure. So what I'd be curious to know is, let's go back in time, right? Mm-hmm. Craig here on the third floor. Today we're talking to Mari Takuda. Did I pronounce that right?
Yes.
Good. In the Insider Insight series, it gives me a chance to talk to developers, designers, writers, artists, and people in the industry. And I like to find out exactly their creative process, how that works, how they approach their work, really their philosophy. And today what we're going to do is we're going to figure out from Mari. First of all, I'd like to find out where she gets her inspirations, how she does her research. And really, how does she end up creating compelling stories that end up on the page or in games? So we're going to take a quick break. And when we get, oh, am I still there? Tell me when you can see me. Do you still see me?
Yes, I can see you. Okay. The whole thing froze. And so,
all right, cool. I'm going to just for safety's sake, I'll just do my little spiel again.
Okay, thank you.
I'll cut to the break. Yeah, yeah. So the insider. You still here? Look, the podcast is over. And you sat through all of the breaks and bloopers? Well, I mean, if you're here, might as well run over to patreon.com and become a supporter. Don't forget to rate and review this podcast too while you're at it, on whatever platform you're listening to. I do appreciate you sticking around. Take care.